Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
Isn't this a sports show?
All right, so do we just talk about Patrick Mahomes for like 45 minutes then? Because like that's something I'm always in the mood to do.
Almost entirely.
Like, do you want me to talk about Patrick Mahomes more? Because I will. I'll do it. I'm crazy. I'll do it.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
If you start any conversation about the Chiefs today with, man, I don't know about that defense, you have to go. You have to launch yourself into another hemisphere. You have to jump on Patrick Mahomes' hand and let him fling you to the sun, which he can do.
Take the show with you by listening on the Sports Radio 810 mobile app at 810WHB.com or by searching for Almost Entirely Sports wherever you get your podcasts.
Mahomes on the rain, where they allow some deep play, where seldom is seen a check down or a screen, and you can win more than one playoff game. Mahomes! Okay, no, I'll do the show.
Encore!
I don't have another verse, I just have the one.
This is Almost Entirely Sports on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Hello, and welcome into a very special podcast-exclusive version of Almost Entirely Sports, the official podcast of the Tyrann Mathieu Fan Club. I'm Joshua Briscoe. Who else would I be? I don't know. The vibe is just different right now, because it's not a live radio show. I could go back and edit this if I wanted to. I promise I'm not going to do that, because the mistakes are part of the charm. And I'm unfortunately alone in our recording studio here at Sports Radio 810, talking to you through the magic of the recorded medium. Rudy Salazar out and about doing some other stuff today, so he is not with us. And, you know, Beards is currently, actually, as I record this, Beards is mere feet away on the other side of one wall. His ghost, the ghost of Beards. He did, unfortunately, he is no longer with us. And you can take that to mean whatever you'd like. But I figured that, you know what, I was coming back into the station today for a little while to do a couple of things after Chiefs press conferences. I was out at Chiefs pressers these last couple of days. And even though we never actually get to the audio whenever we have, you know, live shows where we can fully get into the various nonsense, today I'm actually going to get to it, because especially in today's pressers, I got to ask some questions of Eric Bieniemy, Steve Spagnuolo, Dave Tobe, and Travis Kelce. Yesterday, got a question to Mike Rimmers that I think is really interesting and is going to end up painting an interesting picture of the Chiefs' right side of their offensive line. So just a lot of stuff that I thought we'd talk about today. We're going basically only Chiefs here, except for I did tell Rudy that, you know, I would acknowledge the terrible thing that happened in sports last night, which is that the Denver Nuggets went to Phoenix and took game one of the NBA season from the Phoenix Suns. So the Nuggets are 1-0. The Suns are 0-1. And the Suns still swept them in four in the Western Conference playoffs. So I'm not too hurt about it. But, you know, it's a tough start for me and a good start for Rudy, which is pretty annoying. And also, I figured that if you haven't heard any of the chatter about the various Tyrann Mathieu, I don't know what, actually. If this was a normal podcast, maybe I could pause here. If I was going to treat it like an editable podcast, I could just pause here and try to think of a good word for what all of that has been. And I really don't know what it's been. It's been strange. If you didn't see any of this, I'll give you the, you know what, I can go ahead and get it exactly right for the sake of at least getting you, you know, the correct jumping off point for where all of this ended up going. And I imagine that if you're a regular listener to this particular show, you have a pretty good feel of where I was actually getting, what I was actually getting at, coming from, whatever. We could talk about it a little bit. It will not be the entire show, because honestly, I'm a little bit over it. But after Mathieu had that clear shot on Taylor Heinicke against the Washington football team, which still rules and is my favorite team name in the NFL, I think. He had that shot at Heinicke, and he didn't wrap him up. He kind of threw a shoulder at him, and Heinicke just sort of rolled away, and then eventually Frank Clark grabbed him and wheeled him down, and then actually Heinicke just sat on top of Frank Clark and still wasn't down. It was a very strange play. And I tweeted at the time, because Matthew was very vocal earlier in the game, yelling at the sideline and all sorts of stuff, which is a part of who he is. I wasn't being critical of that aspect of his game, but whatever. I tweeted, I'm probably going to get tweeted at for this. Spoiler alert, I was. But if you're going to be screaming at the sidelines when stuff breaks down, you should use your arms to complete a sack on an untouched blitz instead of, I don't remember what the rest of the tweet was because it cut off there, but it was essentially instead of going for the hit stick, I think is what I said, and then bouncing off of, you know, Taylor Heinicke. And then Tyrann Mathieu, shortly after the game, retweeted that by saying, fractured my thumb, which the Chiefs did not announce, but he has apparently not been limited, or he was limited yesterday. As I record this, we don't have today's notes, but reports that he had a padded thumb in practice. So, I mean, that checks out. So he tweeted, fractured my thumb, couldn't even use my right arm. That's why I lunged with my shoulder. Next time, at me, I'm a big boy. I expect you to act the same. Crybaby asses. And then it ended up being a much longer back and forth than that because ultimately I think he took it as a very, you know, like major professional shot at him as a person and as a teammate and leader and whatnot, which is not what I was getting at. But also my tweet is still up to read, and his that I just read from you, I had to read from a screenshot, which I don't think is necessarily the biggest boy behavior, but I've decided not to be the one that has to litigate all of that because he's volunteered to. I also, again, if you listen to this show, you know what I think about Tyrann Mathieu. And I think very highly of Tyrann Mathieu. I think he is either number one or number two on this defense in terms of his overall impact and talent. It's just between him and Chris Jones, who are both elite players at their positions. And he missed a play. At no point in our conversation, and I say conversation lightly because it was mostly him being angry at me and lots of other people on Twitter, and then me trying to respond in a way that I thought was reasonable, but whatever. Over the course of that, It seemed like there was a major disconnect, and I can live with that. That's fine. As Tyrann Mathieu said, I'm a big boy. But he also did not speak to the media this week, which would have probably made for a more interesting audio clip than maybe the ones that we ended up with. I do really like what I'm going to bring for you here today, but that's all. I'm kind of over it at this point. My mentions have mostly cooled down, and you know. Maybe I won't get the Mathieu family Christmas card this week or this Christmas season. I don't know. It was a weird one. It was a very strange one, and it is what it is. So, hopefully, it's very weird to, I don't know. Let me put this out really quick. Like, Tyrann Mathieu's entire deal is motivation, loud, accountability. You're going to hear Travis Kelce talk about accountability here in a second. I figure that his response to that tweet, which I sort of assumed he would eventually end up seeing, but wasn't rooting for by any means, I figured his response to that would be something along the lines of some sort of self-accountability of like, yeah, I missed that. Maybe I'm physically limited in that case. We didn't know about the thumb at the time. And that there would be some self-accountability there and say I should have, you know, tackled Taylor Heinicke when I was at full speed and had him in my sights. And he got very defensive instead. So, you know. Great defenders defend 24/7, I suppose. So, Godspeed, Tyrann Mathieu. Sorry that all got so weird for a while. I don't think I'm sorry about anything, actually. I'm sorry if I was poor at communicating what I actually was believing and thinking and saying during that time. He also would have been nice to sack Taylor Heinicke. At that point in the game, it probably didn't end up mattering, but you want to make plays when you have a chance to. That's all. I thought that was reasonable. Lots of people didn't. I'm also totally cool, by the way, if players want to respond to criticisms or whatever and, you know, either provide more context or push back, that's fine by me. I think it's a little bit weak to go name-calling and then tweet deleting. But, you know, different strategies, I suppose, on Twitter. And it is what it is, I guess. I gave it my best shot to sort of clarify what I was getting at. He wasn't interested. Lots of people weren't. That's okay. So there is my there's the official statement from the Briscoe legal team. I was actually just reading off a sheet of paper that entire time. I just tried to make it sound authentic, and so I hope I did. And if you go, well, I think you're being unfair. That's fine. That's okay. You can tweet it at me, because anyone can tweet at me at any point because Twitter is very strange. A couple things that I figured I'd mention here. Obviously, we podcast the post game show up on the Almost Entirely Sports podcast feed right here. So maybe you listened to the post game show and got the majority of where I was coming from post Washington victory for the Chiefs. Obviously, you get the turnovers in the first half, and you get, you know, the worst play maybe of Patrick Mahomes' professional career. And then in the second half, both sides of the ball are in fact kind of running at the same time, which is all you can ask for. Obviously, look, I said this on postgame. I've said this in every platform I can find, because I think it is the thing to keep in mind right now. You cannot beat Buffalo or Los Angeles in January by beating Washington in October. There is not a clear carryover there. However, if they would have just barely squeaked by Washington, which is what looked like might have happened at halftime, or if they would have lost outright, either way, you would have had a very different vibe this entire week. This is something that has come up and came up a lot last year that ended up mostly getting people kind of frustrated because of the implications. But generally speaking, great teams blow out bad teams or handle them fully. There were some times last year where the Chiefs let their foot off the gas a little bit. You get a garbage time score, and all of a sudden the stats become, you know, well, the Chiefs have only won a game by 6 points twice this year. I'm making that up. I don't remember what the actual stats were. And in this case, it's not about margin of victory or whatever. It's about watching that game and seeing a certain amount of dominance, of clear separation between the two teams that are on the field. Seeing that and having a real confidence in that second half, and both sides of the ball, by the way, is a wonderful place to be. And just to see that come back for this team, again, on both sides of the ball, is very refreshing. It's also going to be very different against the Titans, who then the next day on Monday Night Football ended up beating the Bills. I could tell you here's a sidetrack story that would probably last a lot longer if Rudy were here to ask me follow-up questions. I went out to Q39 that night before. We had dinner plans there for 6:30 with my dear beloved friend Ari Temkin of Big 12 Radio on SiriusXM and a few of his colleagues who were in town for Big 12 Media Days. And so I went out to see Ari because I don't get to see him very often. We had dinner at Q39. Also a sidetrack, as a newly diabetic person that is trying really hard to, you know, minimize those good carbs, I got the veggies and the cucumber and onion salad at Q39, along with just brisket and burnt ends. There's still carbs in the, you know, sweet sauce and everything, and some of the vegetables. There's some squash in there. But, oh, baby. Oh, my goodness. Q39 is... I have a nostalgia of a pure unadulterated love for Joe's that may never be topped. But oh my goodness, Q39 really comes through just every time. I usually get a sandwich of some sort, but again, trying to cut out a little bit of that bread. Went to Q39 that night, that Monday, ahead of Titans Bills, and got that. And I will say, if you like the cucumber and onion salad, I wanted to hone in on that. First of all, the burnt ends were unbelievable. The brisket was very good. The burnt ends were ridiculous. I've also ordered barbecue from a couple places closer to my house that I'm not going to name because I'm not trying to hurt anybody's feelings. But getting some merely average Kansas City barbecue, which is still pretty good barbecue, but if you get some average Kansas City barbecue and then you go Joe's burnt ends, Q39 burnt ends, the scale totally changes. It's just unbelievable. It gives you an even greater appreciation for how Joe's and Q39 do whatever they do to those delicious little meat cubes. I'm putting my full endorsement, though, at Q39 behind the cucumber and onion salad. It's like a lightly pickled, it's just cucumbers and onions, but it's not a super bitey onion at that point, because again, I'm guessing it's been like quick pickled or something. If you like cucumbers and onions and pickles, I would say, and maybe kind of that vinaigrette sort of flavor, try that as one of your sides next time. I really loved it. It's also definitely kind of weird. So if you think, well, I don't really like cucumbers or onions, like if Rudy were here, Rudy does not like onions, I would probably not suggest it. Anyway, that night we went out to Q39, had a wonderful dinner, and I went out to leave about, I don't know, partway through the first quarter of the game. There are TVs in there, so I've been keeping an eye on it. And I wanted to just, I was going to just put it on the radio, like a tune into Sports Radio 810 WHB to hear it, and drive home and then get home and watch the entire second half at home and really try to hone in so I could really watch the Titans up against a measuring stick that we just saw the Chiefs go up against, being Buffalo. And then I turn my key in my car. It doesn't start. Now, my car had died the previous Sunday. It was right before the Bills game, actually. Beards had to jump my car before the game actually started. So I was running over to Good Sense to get some food. I ate some bread. Only half of it, but I ate some bread that day. And it died then, but it had been okay since then. And then it just was, we had not been in Q39 for 2 hours. And my car was totally dead. No big deal. I've got a thing in my trunk. It's a battery jumper that I used on my Volvo for a long time because the battery was in the trunk, and so of my Volvo, that is. And so I just use this external battery thing literally all the time to get anywhere for like too long. It was a mess. But I had that, so I just figured I'll just jump it and do that. And it didn't even remotely get the job done. It was not even close to starting, and then the battery charger thing was completely drained. Well, if you're wondering, why didn't you ask Ari or the people who were there to jump your car for you? It's because they took Ubers. And by the time I realized that my battery jumper thing was absolutely bleeped, they were gone. And also, no big deal, I've got AAA. I thought I had AAA. Apparently, it expired and didn't auto-renew after auto-renewing for 3 years. I also moved to the Missouri side at some point in there, so maybe that bleeped it up. I'm not sure. So I am on the phone with AAA. I'm paying to restart my membership. I have the service fee that pops in. This is just me talking about my day now. I appreciate this. I thank you, everyone, for listening to my terrible frustration. I don't know why I had a moment of self-awareness like that, but I think it's because I came in here to do a podcast where I played a bunch of Chiefs audio, and now we're 15 minutes in, and all I've done is tried to sound not defensive about the Tyrann Mathieu thing and then talk about my Q39 experience and my bad car battery. Anywho, I love Drew Brees. So, call AAA, same day fee and all of that. At this point, the game is fully happening, but I've got YouTube TV on my family's, you know, login. I've got it on my phone. So I'm watching the game in my car, just waiting and 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 waiting, and hours pass. By the time the guy actually got there, who was very helpful, by the way, shout out to the guy that came and helped me at Q39. If you're listening to the show, shout out to you. Thank you for your help. But there were several different steps along the way with some extensive extra downtime. Like, I signed up again, and then the lady that I was talking to, I lost connection with, so I had to start some of that process over again. It was a whole deal. Anyway, it was about 15 to 20 minutes after Monday Night Football ended that my guy showed up, tested my battery, jumped it, I got home, all of that was fine. I have since replaced the battery with help from our dear friends at Victory Ford, who hooked me up with this car and, you know, did an excellent job. Love the folks at Victory. Took it out to them yesterday and they sorted it out, and I've got a new battery, a good warranty on it, and all of those things. I've got car peace of mind. Victory Ford is not a sponsor of this podcast at this moment, but I appreciate them very much. All of that to say that my viewing experience of Titans Bills from about the second quarter through the end of what ended up being a thrilling football game was exclusively through the lens of my phone, which I was mostly using for a good portion of time until at least the second half. And really, I think it was about partway through. I would say the second half I had gotten everything lined up. But I had a difficult experience watching Monday Night Football. But I got to watch at least the second half on my phone in the Q39 parking lot waiting for AAA to get there. Renee was at work, so AAA was the way to go. If I would have had it, which I thought I did, and now I do again, so here we are. Anyway, watching that game as sort of a barometer of where the Chiefs are at and where the Titans are at and where the Bills are at is super interesting. Because I mean, the Titans lost to the Jets, right? That happened. I'm not imagining that. ESPN Titans. The other problem with not having Rudy here is that I have no one to stall. I have to stall exclusively for myself. And this is what it sounds like when I do that. I stall and sort of just chat, and you get a light pause, and then I go, yep, the Titans lost to the Cardinals to open the year, and then they lost to the Jets to make them 2-2. Then they beat the Jags, and it's like, well, who really knows what they are? They're 3-2 then. Well, then they handle the Bills. And so I've been a little bit of a Titans skeptic, even as they did something that I thought was incredibly interesting and at least worth the gamble for their offense, which is bringing in Julio Jones. Now, the health of Julio Jones and A.J. Brown is up in the air. And if a running back has maybe ever mattered in the NFL, Derrick Henry is, it might be that guy. He's unbelievable and tremendously fun to watch. One of those guys that, honestly, I think that you lose something fun in football if you spend a bunch of time trying to figure out how much Derrick Henry matters in the grand scheme of things. Because I'm all about that conversation in certain contexts, obviously, right? I kind of enjoy it because I know that the numbers and the facts are on my side, and there are times when you're talking about drafting a running back or whatever. The Titans at one point made Derrick Henry available in the trade market. I think they had just signed or traded for one of those former Patriots running backs, and there were reports that, like, yeah, they made him available, and then nobody really took him up on it, and now Derrick Henry is King Henry. He gets all the graphics with the big crowns, and rightfully so, because the dude is, it's got to be like tackling a bull. Like, I don't know how you do it. So anyway, I think Derrick Henry is at least worth talking about in like a matchup circumstance, even though the Titans passing offense, I haven't actually looked for this year, and I probably should see if I can figure this out somewhere, but the Titans passing offense ended up being the thing over these last couple of years that ultimately kind of turned their tides as a team and ended up, I wrote about this before the AFC Championship game up on The Athletic in an old archive story that you can probably find if you Google it. Derrick Henry was not going to be the key to that game. And frankly, I don't think he's going to be the deciding factor of this game either. He's just one of several weapons you have to deal with who can make your life really difficult and make your day really long. He can do both of those things. He can have big plays. He can make it really tough to stop them in short yardage situations. That's all totally reasonable. But if the Chiefs hold the Titans to 200 passing yards, and A.J. Brown and Julio Jones are very minimal playmakers in this game, I would take the Chiefs without batting an eye, which I do think makes this an interesting game. Because everyone can look at Derrick Henry and say, yeah, well, they can throw for 200 yards and still have 400 yards of total offense. Because Derrick Henry is just, he is that dude, 100%. Again, how much do individual running backs move the needle? How much does Henry? We can talk about it. He went 20 for 143 for 7.2 yards per carry and 3 touchdowns with that 76-yard long against Buffalo. That matters. I don't know that that's sustainable. I don't know how often you're going to see that. But that does matter. So the Chiefs have their hands full. Buffalo's defense, which has been praised for the entire season, while not being terribly well tested against anybody until they got to the Chiefs, they gave up 34 points to the Titans. Had a chance to force overtime with a field goal, all of that. But they gave up 34 points to Tennessee after giving up 20 to the Chiefs. The Bills had scored 35, 43, 40, and 38 points over their 4 victories between their loss to the Steelers and their loss to the Titans. They put up 31 against Tennessee. My leaning as of right now, and this is concerning, you know, around the injury reports we've gotten so far. Again, I don't have Thursday's injury report as I record this right now. It'll probably come out shortly after I'm done recording. It might come out before I publish this. I don't know. But the thing that the Chiefs might lose is a somewhat limited Tyrann Mathieu, if his tweet to me said anything, and maybe a completely absent Anthony Hitchens, which is really concerning. Not because he's been great, he hasn't. And Spags even mentioned today, like, they had a package even before Hitchens went out where just Bolton and Gay were the two linebackers on the field together. Ben Neiman will probably do most of the calls if Hitchens can't go, based on what Spag said today. But if there would be a good time to make sure you had your veteran linebacker, going up against Derrick Henry would make a lot of sense. It'd be a good time to have that. Again, though, Hitchens hasn't been very good this year. He also hasn't been quite as disciplined as he'd like this year. Maybe it won't be a big drop-off. The good news is that Charvarius Ward was limited yesterday and will practice at least in some portion today. Same for Chris Jones, limited yesterday. Will practice again at least in a limited fashion today. So if the Chiefs can get healthy, get all their corners healthy at the same time, get everyone except for Anthony Hitchens basically out there, and if they can get Hitchens, great. But if they get everyone except for Hitchens out there, you'll take that. That would be a net positive, I think, for the swapping you could get. And you have Frank Clark out there for another game. Maybe you get Chris Jones back, etc. I don't know what the extent of Jones's workload would be. Same for Charvarius Ward. But you'd like to think that there's a little bit of momentum from the half that they put up against Washington. But obviously, also, Washington is not half of the offense that Tennessee can be. It's interesting, because the Titans are an interesting team. The Chiefs' defense is obviously concerning. The Titans' offense seems like it's got a freight train and then two aliens, and then Ryan Tannehill just has to pilot the train and the spaceship. But I can't help but think that the Chiefs' offense is going to have one of these games really soon, where it's just like where they punt or turn the ball over once, where they don't score like once. And I'm not totally confident that the Titans are just gonna fall apart or anything. I just kind of think the Chiefs are still gonna win this game. And look, I mean, I'm 500 picking Chiefs games this year because I've picked them to win every week. And I don't like that. I don't really feel an obligation to do that or anything. I just feel like I've learned my lessons about picking against Patrick Mahomes. If you pick the Chiefs every week, you're going to have a significantly winning record. And obviously, through six games this year, that's not true. But I also can't help myself. Right now, and I'm going to have to come up with a score prediction for a video I'm going to shoot as soon as I'm done with this podcast here. So I should probably just pick one now. But I kind of feel like a really excellent Chiefs offensive game coming through in a game where they have to have it. But the only issue through this point of the season has really been the turnovers. And if those do actually finally stop here, which is hard to predict and hard to execute, and I want you to hear from Travis Kelce on some of this stuff here in a second. But I think the Chiefs can win this game like, I got to do the math here. I was going to say 35-31. And I'm trying to figure out who's settling for field goals there. That's just, what, six touchdowns? Is that right? Five touchdowns? Six times five would be 30, and then the extra points would be five more. It'd be five touchdowns for 35. I think that plays. Maybe it's 38-34. And, you know, these games are never quite as high scoring as you think. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm grabbing a post-it note. And I'm grabbing a pen. And I'm writing it down. I'm going 35-31 Chiefs. And I'm guessing, I would also suggest that you take the over. I'll tell you what, I'm not sure I would want to bet on this game, if that's what you're here for. The actual, I don't even know what the line is, to be honest. I think the Chiefs are narrowly favored. Even on the road, wouldn't hurt my feelings if the Titans were favored in this game, honestly. Does ESPN's thing not have the Lions anymore? You want me to go to another website, ESPN? Are you kidding me? Oh, here we go. Four and a half. 4.5 on the, boy, I gave you a 4-point margin of victory there for the Chiefs. Titans getting 4.5 at home feels like a lot. But there it is. Seems like a lot of points. I don't know. Let's start with the turnovers And the accountability, I think I used that word earlier, because it's something that Travis Kelce talked a little bit about today. He talked about the offense a bunch and all sorts of things around it. But I wanted to ask, and he had been asked about Mahomes' his interception, again, the turnovers altogether. He'd been asked a little bit about that. But I wanted to kind of drill in a little bit in this question that I asked him earlier today. On the interception that Patrick Mahomes threw, the wobbly one out of his hand that he never should have let go, and what it was like on the sideline, what he would say to Patrick Mahomes in a situation like that, when obviously you know that he's going to continue to play football like Patrick Mahomes. I said this on Times Ours this week, and I will say it again here happily. No Chiefs fan should want Patrick Mahomes to play more like Kirk Cousins. Let Patrick be Patrick, right? Let Pat be Pat. But also, everyone knows, no one is questioning, that interception was miserable. So what's the attitude around that? What do you do whenever you have a moment like that? Travis Kelce answered that question with a good answer here about that interception and accountability in general, including a story from his own recent past here on the Chiefs.
I mean, I think the coaches do a great job of keeping guys accountable in those kind of situations. I mean, even myself last year, I remember getting fumbling a ball against Buffalo right before half, and it's like, there's get out of bounds. You know, it's the golden rule in 2 minutes. I tried to make a cut inside knowing that we had a timeout to spare, and I ended up fumbling on the play, and we didn't have a chance to score points there at the end of the half. EB's on me. Coach Reed's on me, you know, just get out of bounds, just get out of bounds. I was like, yeah, I know, right? But at the same time, you know, that accountability, it keeps everybody focused, and it keeps, you know, ball security as the prime goal. And, of course, when Pat or when anybody turns the ball over in this offense, you know, the coaches are going to hold them accountable. But the players and the leaders on this team, I know, I think Orlando went up to him. I know I went up to him and said, just be you, man. Just be Pat Mahomes. You don't got to be anything more than that. Pat Mahomes is, you know, good enough.
I'm not sure that any of that should be, like, surprising in any particular way. But isn't it interesting to get a little bit of the sideline conversation in a moment like that? Where, again, the last thing you want is for Patrick Mahomes to ever get gun-shy. Because at that point, You've traded Patrick Mahomes in for something a whole lot less explosive, a whole lot less fun, and a whole lot less interesting. And I have never had any fear of Mahomes doing that to himself. I've never had any fear of Andy Reid or Eric Bieniemy or anyone on that offense trying to get that out of him. But I was also curious as to what you do there, because you don't want to just say, hey, it's fine, don't worry about it. Let's keep it moving. Because that's also not totally true or totally fair, right? It's not fine. What if the Chiefs would have ended up needing 3 points at the end of the game? What if they would have gone down and been able to score a touchdown there? You know, how different would things have been at halftime? How different could things have been at any number of stops along the way? And ultimately, you have to be able and willing to tell the people around you when they've made a mistake or something. And, I mean, this is probably true outside of sports as well, but like, If someone makes an uncharacteristic mistake, you don't want to assume that that is now what is characteristic of them. You don't want to assume that is now their character. But you also don't want to just say that it's not a big deal in a situation like this where it very much could have been. This game was very much still up in the air at that moment. The Chiefs had a chance to actually put a little bit of space there between that last drive of the half and then getting the ball back to start the second. So I just thought that was interesting. You're not necessarily telling these guys that anything that they don't know already, but you are holding them accountable and saying, hey, I know you messed up. You know you messed up there. Don't let that slip your mind next time. Because maybe this little extra bit of conversation right now is going to be the thing that either encourages you or motivates you or keeps you on track. And I just think that kind of stuff is pretty interesting, because we don't often get, you know, incredibly good access into what those moments are like, because we often don't get to be there for them. So I thought that was pretty interesting there from Travis Kelce. Let's stay with the offensive side of the ball here, because I think this is maybe the thing, the development from this week that I came into the week with some questions about, and I now no longer really feel particularly many questions about this. I'm talking about the right tackle position. Mike Remmers, it came out like an hour or 2 hours before game time, I think, on Sunday, that he was going to get the start over Lucas Niang. And there was a report that Niang had a minor hamstring injury, and to whatever extent that played into it. And I'm a tiny bit skeptical. Think it might have been the Chiefs doing right. But I mean, I think Niang did show up on the injury report, but was never limited, if memory serves. Maybe the Chiefs doing him a little bit of a solid, saying, hey, he's got a hamstring, and let's go ahead and put that out there, and so it's not just a full benching, because that could have changed the narrative a little bit. But, you know, or maybe he really was struggling through that hamstring, and they thought that was hurting him. Either way is totally fine. I think it's going to have the same result, though, which is that it cracked the door open for Mike Remmers, or it was a full benching and starting of Mike Remmers. As soon as I saw that we were going to hear from Remmers in the press conferences on Wednesday, that to me was enough of a sign that he is the starting right tackle of this football team now and in the immediate future. And we got to talk to Remmers. I got to ask him about a couple of things, and we got to talk to Eric Bieniemy today, and I got to ask him specifically about Remmers. I'll go in chronological order here, but you can start to find where I think some of these things are obvious, that this is going to be Remmers' job. Thought he played pretty well against Washington with a very tough matchup across from him, going up against Chase Young at least a good chunk of the time. And whenever he opened his press availability on Wednesday, I asked him what it was like to get back on the field again for the first time since the Super Bowl, obviously. And then also he suffered that back injury during training camp, which he was the starter at right tackle before that. He had the back injury, and then Lucas Niang took the job from there. So I asked him if he could kind of walk us through what that experience was like, what it was like to get back out there. And then I asked a follow-up. You'll hear my question in here that sort of puts the Chiefs offensive line on a pretty funny little scale in terms of experience across this line.
Oh, man, it felt great getting back out there. I love playing, going into year 10. And, you know, it brings me a lot of joy being out there on the field with my teammates and everything like that. And yeah, I was just banged up during training camp, and you know, they got great staff here that got me ready, and been practicing on the scout team and stuff like that, just trying to stay ready for the opportunity, and happy to be back out there.
You mentioned going into year 10. I'm not sure if the rest of the offensive line has 10 years, probably around yeah. that. What's that like, being the elder statesman of that group now?
You know what? We got a lot of young guys, but they don't act like young guys. You know, they're you know, wiser than their age, you know. So it's been a lot of fun. I think we got a great group, and you know, I'm really proud of this group and proud to be a part of it. And I thought everyone battled their tails off last week, and we've been doing it all season. And looking forward to this game this week, though.
I like all that, and I like Mike Remmers. I really do. But that last line there is probably the most important thing in terms of predicting where they go from here. He's looking forward to the game this week. And again, he spoke to the media because he's going to start at right tackle this week. I feel pretty strongly about that. I feel even more strongly about it after talking to Eric Bieniemy today. Here's what Bieniemy said whenever I asked him what Mike Remmers provides to this offensive line, looking like he's going to be the guy at right tackle.
Here's what you gain. You gain a veteran who's been in the league for a number of years. On top of that, Mike Remmers has been with us now for a few years, and he understands the system. There's also something that takes place up front. Those guys got to do a great job of over-communicating with one another. And so with Remmers in there, he's going to help Trey to get better, because now he's over-communicating the necessary information, you know, back and forth to each other. And the best thing about that is now Lucas has an opportunity to sit and observe and watch and practice, watching how Remmers is handling certain situations that present itself. I think it's a great opportunity for Remmers, but on top of that too, it's teaching Lucas, all right, all the ins and outs on how to become a better professional.
Eric Bieniemy is already a head coach in terms of coach speak, which makes this clip even more exciting for me, because I think there's some stuff in there that's pretty interesting. I think that maybe the like third thing up there is that Lucas Niang can watch from behind Orlando Brown Jr. and Mike Remmers, and watch those guys both work as guys who have done it for a while. Remmers, obviously, significantly longer. I think that he can absolutely benefit from that. I also think that's something that you can say whenever a guy is essentially benched for an older player, whenever you would like the younger player to have really taken that job and just never given it back. I am pretty confident that the Chiefs would rather have Lucas Niang playing right tackle for the sake of the long haul right now, but not to an extent where you would have him playing over a perhaps, at this point, better player there. Also, you hear the talk of communication, and somebody asked, I can't remember who it was, I'm not leaving anyone's name out on purpose, but somebody later asked if it was sort of an information overload for Lucas Niang, and Bienemy kind of said, not really, but acknowledged that there's a lot going on, that it's a hard position and everything. For Niang to be able to watch Rimmers communicate from that position and to provide that there from that side, I do think there is some inherent value to that. Being able to make Trey Smith a better player by putting Rimmers beside him, I thought was super interesting. You know, experience can be a good thing. It can be a bad thing. It can be code for old. It can be code for, incredibly talented and wonderful and excellent. It can be any number of things. In this case, though, I went back and I double-checked on all of this. Mike Rimmers came into this season with 9 full years of NFL experience, now in year 10. Orlando Brown Jr. came into this year with 3 years of NFL experience. He's now entering and playing in year 4. 5 years for Joe Tooney, now in year 6. 0 years of previous experience for any of the rookies there, now all in year 1. So you only get 5 years of past experience for Tooney, 3 years of past experience for Orlando Brown Jr. That is 8 years of past experience for the entire Chiefs offensive line outside of Mike Rimmers, who is in his 10th year with 9 full years of past experience. That's crazy. Like, I can't imagine that happens very often on an NFL offensive line, which goes to show both that Rimmers has been doing it for a while, if that's code for old or whatever, or if it's just the experience being a true positive. And it shows how young the rest of the Chiefs' offensive line is. Year 6 for Joe Tooney makes him clearly the old guy before Rimmers got out there. So I think that that's pretty interesting. And I'm comfortable with him having that job. And then also, then if either tackle ends up getting banged up for any reason, you can throw Lucas Niang out there and it shouldn't be a disaster by any means. He wasn't a disaster through the first 5 weeks, but I also think that there's a chance that Rimmers can improve on that position. And anything that makes Patrick Mahomes more comfortable in the pocket is a net positive. So I'm totally good with that. And then also, you know, the Chiefs were able to shake some things up. 2 things left here in terms of one being a little bit of a shakeup on the defensive side. Spags talked about Thornhill getting the start over Daniel Sorensen, and he said he was pretty happy with how he played. He said if you go by the result, it was great. But he wasn't exactly effusive in his praise, which was a little bit interesting because our dear friend Seth Kaiser did a film review on Juan Thornhill and also the guy that I asked about here in a second, you'll hear. And it seemed like Thornhill had a perfectly excellent game, and, you know, maybe, I don't know. I don't know what's going on there, man. That whole situation is still weird. But Sorensen was relegated to a bit role. Thornhill got 100% of the snaps. Also getting 100% of the snaps on Sunday, though, was Rashad Fenton. Now, I asked Spags about Fenton's performance, what he saw from him, and also if there's a plan in place if Tarvarius Ward is able to return this week, where they might finally get that whole cornerback group pretty healthy.
We'll see where we're at with that first, but I thought Rashad did a great job. He played aggressive. He made some really good key plays for us. One that won't even stick out is it was a 3rd and 8-ish, and he stopped a slant. It was completed, but he stopped it for 4. I think it's when they went for the field goal and missed it. But that's a key play. He did a nice job. He really competed out there. Rashad does that, so that's what he's good at.
I'll just try to pat myself on the back really quick so I never pass up that opportunity. The 2 guys that I think of whenever I think of late-round picks or undrafted guys, because you'll have one of each here in this little combo, of guys that I really liked immediately as the Chiefs added them to their roster, Darrell Williams, who had a nice game, obviously, and Rashad Fenton are 2 of the first 2 guys that I think of. Of course, I could be biased and forgetting about that. Maybe I loved Bo Pete Keys or something. I don't know. But I've always liked Fenton for a lot of the things that Spags laid out there. And that is one of those things that you can almost guarantee that will translate from college to NFL tape. You may not be able to guarantee how the athleticism will translate depending on the level of competition that they went up against. Mentally, you probably can't guarantee much because you're seeing such different things depending on where you play college ball and get into the NFL level. But the aggressiveness and the the tempo and like mindset that you play with does seem like that shouldn't change at the next level. And for Fenton, it's just always been something that he's been good at. Like he is a fully competent, though not physically overwhelming, corner. And man, I mean that with the highest of praise, because it's really hard to not be a physical anomaly at that position at the NFL level, obviously, in terms of like, you know, the world population, dude is a physical anomaly. But in terms of being an NFL corner, he would not jump out to you as like, they're right there, that's the special athlete. But you put him out there, and the production always seems to be there, which is, again, I mean that as nothing but an enormous compliment. I wonder what happens when Ward comes back. I would like to think at this point that Ward and Snead probably still start on the outside, but then Snead kicks into the slot. And then I would choose Fenton over Mike Hughes and DeAndre Baker with just what we've seen so far this year in terms of being that third guy out there. That might not matter this week. I'm not sure where Ward is going to be. I'm not sure where he's going to be once he's back out at all. Maybe they need him to be the first guy off the bench because they don't want to give him 100% of the snaps right away. A lot of things to determine there in terms of the injury recovery and stuff that we don't know, but something to keep an eye on Sunday whenever the Chiefs take on the Titans. Last piece of audio here is from Dave Tobe. He took a couple of questions about where you want your guys to fair catch punts or not. Obviously, Mecole Hardman took one inside the five last week and, you know, not great there. But he went through and talked a little bit about how, well, it depends on the rotation of the ball. If the ball is spinning in a way that it looks like it's going to land and then bounce backwards, you do want to go ahead and fair – or you – hold on. I guess at that spot you would want to fair catch it because it could bounce and then die, you know, at the four or five or whatever potentially. I think that's what would make – yes. And then if it is bouncing, it looks like it's going to continue to spin and potentially go into the end zone, of course, you want to let it go. Then there's lots of other things that I tried to follow what I could there. And he said for Hardman on that punt, it was actually a spiral, which he said he thinks kind of confused him. And then maybe he ended up misreading it because it wasn't one of the ones that you would like to see them fair catch there. So he should have let it go, but he misread the ball. And there's a whole part of punt fielding there that I've just never really thought about. And so Tobe talked about that for a little bit. And then I asked him if that spiral or spin reading ability on a punt is something that takes a long time to develop, if somebody naturally has it, or if he has anyone from his past where he said, you know what, this guy just pretty much read it right every time.
I never had anybody that read it right every time. You know, it's hard. Punt returner is probably one of the toughest jobs that there is in NFL. I mean, you got guys running down the field. You got to make a read. You got to see if guys are close to you. Can you field it? Can you fair catch it? You know, there's a lot of decisions that got to be made. You know, so you got to give them a little bit of leeway, you know, a lot of times. And, you know, that was this one. And I'm sure he would want to take that one back, obviously.
That's just one of those things that can happen whenever you get the special teams coach pretty much every week. Sometimes he mentions something that most of us have not spent much time thinking or pondering about, and then it ends up being the thing that's most interesting from his presser. I haven't really spent any time thinking about reading the spiral of the punt as the ball's coming down. It kind of felt like a thing that maybe you would just have to guess at and just hope that you got lucky, or just guess by the spot on the field you land at or the tendencies of the punter even. But being able to read that in real time seems really hard, which explains why he's never had anybody be perfect at it. So I just thought that was kind of an interesting little tidbit there to help us round out this special little quick AES here exclusively on the podcast feed. I'll be back for postgame on Sunday, so I'll talk to you then. I don't know when the next AES will be. It kind of depends on various sports. The World Series wrapping up should be the return of almost entirely sports on a more regular basis. Also, it depends on how long all these series go and everything. Monday, Thursday, Friday will be pretty much wrapped up through football season, because Monday Night Football, Thursday Night Football, and high school football. But if we get another week where, you know, nobody is, everyone is playing sports all the time and there's no show set up, maybe we'll do a few more of these. Let me know if this scratched the itch for you. I'll assume that it did. And, you know, also get that itch checked out would be the other thing I would say. Go to a doctor. I've been many times recently, and I would recommend it. All right, that'll do it. Thank you for listening to this podcast edition of Almost Entirely Sports. And if you, you know, have anything snarky to say about Tyrann Mathieu this week on Twitter, I would just suggest not doing it. I'll talk to you again soon. Talk to you in postgame on Sunday right after Chiefs-Titans. Until then, bye, Mom.